Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable podcast. I'm your host today, standing in for Kev. You can get us on the show on Twitter at EPL Roundtable or email us eplroundtable@gmail.com. Today I'm only joined by one guest, so I'll let Sam introduce himself.
Thanks, Jake. Good to be back on the pods. My name's Sam Karp. I'm a Crystal Palace fan. I occasionally write for the Eagles Beak, and I'm also the deputy editor of Sports Pro. You can find me on Twitter at Sam_Karp.
Thanks, Sam. We'll get into the topics for today. I think we'll start with the big match of the weekend, which turned out to be, I think it was a good first half, and it sort of like fizzled out in the second half, and it ended as a 1-1 draw between Manchester City and Liverpool. Just wanted to know what you thought of the game, and do you think that these two are still the favourites for the title, or do you think there could be any outside surprises from outside those two clubs?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure we're any closer to knowing after that. I think what we can draw from the game, or at least the first half, as you said, which was played at a pretty unbelievable intensity, is that Liverpool and City are still the best two teams in the league when they're on top of their game. And when they reach the level that they did in that first 45, I don't think other teams in the division are capable of living. On paper, you'd have to say that Liverpool maybe just about have the edge, and they'll certainly probably be the happier of the two. With that result today, as if, you know, they don't have the best record that the Etihad in recent times. You know, Van Dijk is obviously irreplaceable for them, but they've had the better start to the season, and I think City still look the more likely of the two to drop points in games you'd expect them to maybe win. But, you know, with that being said, City still have Aguero's come back, plus Laporte and Diaz look like they're maybe in the early stages of forming partnership, which is something City have lacked in recent years, so you never know. But you know, if you look at the table now, after, I guess, we've had a quarter of the games, we're not seeing Liverpool and City set a pace and pull away like they have done in the last two seasons. So, you know, I do think if there were ever a season where we might have a surprise winner, then this could perhaps be it. You know, I mentioned Van Dijk, and we saw Alexander-Arnold go off today. Injuries, fitness are going to play a big part this season, more than ever before. The schedule is extremely congested. Players aren't going to be getting arrest because we're still trying to catch up after the COVID suspension. So, you know, it really is quite unpredictable. It's almost tempting to say that it might even be an advantage for teams to get knocked out of European competitions early if they have aspirations of winning the league. I think in terms of outsiders, the two most obvious challenges for me at the moment look like being possibly Chelsea and maybe even Spurs. You know, they've both built really impressive squads, and that's what teams are going to need this year, a big squad with quality to call on when inevitably pick up knocks and get injured because of that congestion that I just mentioned. You know, after an unconvincing start to the season, Chelsea's new signings look like they're settling in. Lampard appears to be making them a little bit more solid defensively as well. The addition of Thiago Silva looks like a pretty shrewd addition. For Spurs, you could argue that outside of Liverpool, they now have the best front three in the league, and you know they're showing this season that they can grind out results, which is something we haven't necessarily associated with them in the past. You know, I've seen some people laugh them off as title contenders, but it would be a very Jose Mourinho thing to do, to answer those that have been saying he's passed it by winning the thing this year. You know, and then you look at others up there at the moment. Southampton have been brilliant to watch, but I don't think their fans will be insulted by me saying that they probably won't be in the title picture at the end of the season. Then Leicester, they've impressed again. So it'll be interesting to see if they can keep it up after they faded away a little bit at the back end of last season. But I think they'll perhaps be thinking more about getting into that top four than maybe winning the title. So, you know, to your question, I said at the start of the season, I think Liverpool will win the league without running away with it like they did last year. I do still believe that, but I think there is every chance, and I think there's been some early evidence to suggest that, you know, we may well have an unexpected winner this year.
Yeah, it's been an odd start to the season, and you know, there's probably more questions than answers coming out of that game today. I was the opposite of you, and I thought at the start of the season that City would go on to win the league. I thought that they'd bounce back, but they've just been a little bit underwhelming for me. I think they've only scored 10 goals in their 7 matches. So if you're looking at the league table, you'll see that Sam's Palace have more goals, albeit in one more match. But still, that is quite an indictment of the Manchester City attack. They just don't seem to be scoring as many goals or creating as many clear chances as they usually do. I think that's the one thing you normally relied on City for. And even if they had a somewhat ropey defence that used to score enough that you think they would win games. They're just not doing that at the moment. Obviously, against Sheffield United, they only scored once. Against Leeds, they only scored once. They only scored once today. So, yeah, it's a bit of a worry for them, I think. And I'm sure it will improve. I think Jesus looked quite good today. I think having him back is going to help. De Bruyne is still slowly working up his way up to fitness. And he hasn't had a game that he's been completely on it yet for me. But the fact that he's in the team and seems to be building up fitness is only a positive. But yeah, I thought that they probably needed to win today for me to go out all out on City. So yeah, I think I agree that it could be a surprising win, or at least we're going to see quite a few teams near the top of the table until at least January, February time. Spurs obviously got a good win today. They seem to be grinding out results, and they've got a front three that will score goals. Chelsea seem to have fixed their defensive problem. But yeah, it's difficult. I don't look at any team and think they're definitely going to win it yet. And I think that's good for the Premier League. We've also got Leicester up there as well. But I think with the Europa League that they might struggle as the weeks go on, especially before the Christmas period. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how the teams in Europe deal with that. But I just thought I'd ask for your thoughts on Pep's comments after the game about how he thinks that we should be allowed 5 substitutes in the league this year, like a lot of the European leagues have kept on for this season, citing a lot of soft tissue injuries. We saw Trent go off with one today in the game. It's a bit of an odd comment from Pep, because I don't think he's used his 3 subs in all matches this year anyway. But do you think that is something that the Premier League perhaps should have implemented? And do you think we will see the damages of that over the next couple of months?
The thing is, I think I'm not surprised to see Pep bring it up, because you know every Premier League side had a vote when they sort of came to decide whether to keep 5 substitutions rule, and naturally each team was kind of going to have their own motive whether to keep that or not. And I think what ultimately happened is that the teams lower down in the table voted no, and the teams that are higher up in the table voted yes, because naturally the teams towards the top are the ones competing on multiple fronts this year. You know, I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer mentioned it in his post-match conference yesterday, albeit slightly different given that United were playing in Turkey on Wednesday night and then were, for some reason, the lunchtime kickoff on Saturday, which, you know, I think he has a point there. But I don't think it's a surprise to see the bigger sides complaining about it already. For the teams lower down the table, I don't think it makes as much of a difference. You know, those teams higher up naturally have bigger squads, more quality to call on off the bench. And if you are a Crystal Palace, a Newcastle, it's in your own interests not to want City or Liverpool to be able to bring on more of those fresh players, because it's more likely they're going to be able to impact the game. So I do see Pep's point in a way. I think we are going to see a lot more injuries this year because of the congestion, but that is the way it is, and the Premier League is a competition dominated by self-interest, and everyone in that vote at the start of the season would have very much voted in their own interests. And I think the small clubs, again, the teams lower down the table would have been kind of protecting themselves going into the season and looking at what would have been the most likely to benefit them in those games against the top clubs. I'm not surprised to see Pep moaning about it, but at the same time, I think it's something that was kind of inevitably going to happen.
Yeah, it's a tough balance, because I think this is probably one of the things that fueled the recent Project Big Picture talks, because the big clubs didn't get this one through. And I think even at the time, even though I do support Newcastle, I did think that we should have kept it on for another season, just because the amount of football that we're playing in such a short amount of time, even the teams not in Europe are playing a lot more football than they usually would. There was that period with the Carabao Cup, and I know Newcastle had 3 games in that period, and it was like 2 games a week, and it seemed worse if you're in Europe. Like, we saw Spurs have, I think it was like 4 games in 8 days at one point. So I think it would have been fair enough to keep on for this year, but I can see why the smaller clubs haven't. I think it's in their self-interest. You're more likely to get a few more shock results that we've seen already this year. But I think it's only going to heat up this debate over the next couple of months, because I'm sure we'll get more and more injuries, sort of like Alexander-Arnold picked up today. It looked like one that was probably due to the amount of games he's been playing recently. It was quite innocuous. He sort of went down off the ball, and it wasn't an impact injury. So I think we're going to see a few more of those. And unfortunately for Liverpool, they're being hit hard at the moment in the injuries front, especially at the back. But I'm sure other teams will get it as well. But yeah, I can see Pep's point. I just don't think that it was ever going to get passed in the Premier League because of the voting system. I think in European leagues, that the clubs don't have as much of a say as they do in this country. So yeah, it's one that the bigger clubs are just going to have to deal with. And I guess it's strange for the bigger clubs to be suffering in a way that others aren't. But that's where we are with this.
And you say they're suffering, but at the same time they've got the squads to cope. I mean, I thought you look at today, Gomez and Matip still look pretty accomplished for Liverpool, even in that second half when City were piling on the pressure. I don't really think they conceded many chances despite the absence of Van Dijk, Alexander-Arnold going off. You see James Milner coming on, a player with several Premier League titles and others to go with it. So, you know, I can see why they're upset, and I do have some sympathy with them, but they definitely have the quality and the strength and depth to call upon players.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. I think that we've seen that with Liverpool. They've called upon 2 centre-backs in recent weeks that have come in from the youth team and look like they'd, or at least have played a lot more football at other Premier League clubs, even in their youth teams and the inexperienced players. They've got a lot of talent. So, yeah, I do agree with that. And although they would have benefited most from the 5 subs, they're also most likely to be able to cope with not having it, so and dealing with a few more injuries. So yeah, it's definitely a double-edged sword. But just move on to the next topic now. And this was an interesting thing that I think I read on The Athletic this weekend about how not having fans in the stadium might be causing the lack of managerial movement. We haven't had a Premier League managerial sacking yet. And we haven't really had one throughout the lockdown. I think Nigel Pearson went. But there hasn't been a lot of speculation either. There was the recent things about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But I'll talk about Newcastle now. And I think if fans were in the stadium, there'd be a little bit more heat on Steve Bruce for the style of play he's going forward with and some of the decisions he's making. I think that not having fans there is definitely giving managers more time. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on whether you think that is actually true this season, or do you think it's a byproduct of the financial, I guess, financial issues coming out of COVID, and that clubs don't really want to be paying out millions of pounds to sack a manager if they don't really have to. Maybe they're more likely just to stick out the season and give managers more time, because I think the average Premier League managerial reign, it has increased in the last couple of years, so it does seem to be a trend that was picking up before COVID, but certainly now I just don't really see any managerial speculation like we used to.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. I hadn't really thought of it, so I've been sort of looking at the table and trying to sort of place which teams are sort of performing out of line with their expectations, which naturally would kind of lead to a manager coming under pressure. I'm not sure there are too many. You know, I've just been talking about Solskjaer, and there certainly has been a lot of speculation about his job in the last couple of weeks. But, you know, I think there are a few factors to this. You know, you look at who might have been the most under pressure managers coming into this season. You'd probably have said Roy Hodgson at Palace after the winless run at the end of last year. I think it would be fair to say Steve Bruce at Newcastle, as you've just mentioned there. You know, as you say, I know a lot of your fans don't enjoy the way the team plays under him, and his job does always seem to be under the microscope. And then possibly David Moyes at West Ham as well might have been one. he'd have thrown into that category just because a lot of people didn't expect them to start the season well after the stuff that went on in the summer with the owners. But, you know, each of those managers have had reasonable starts the season in terms of results. And I think in line with kind of what their what the expectations of them will have been from their owners. So I don't think there's been reason to speculate about them. Then as you look further down the table, you know, the bottom two at the moment are Sheffield United and Burnley. You know, normally perhaps after eight games, the managers of the teams in the bottom two places would be under pressure. But I think Sean Dyche and Chris Wilder are two guys, you know, they've been at those clubs long enough to have earned the trust to turn the fortunes of those two teams around, which is why I don't think there will have been as much speculation about them. And then you have your promoted sides, you know, Leeds have done pretty well, and I don't think there will ever be speculation about Bielsa losing his job. And then Fulham and West Brom are probably doing just about what everyone will have expected from them. So, you know, I think those are some of the reasons we've not seen much speculation about managers getting the sack. Because I think most are more or less living up to the expectations that they will have been set at the start of the season. You know, maybe playing behind closed doors is kind of making a difference. You know, the owners don't have that fan reaction to go off. But I think, you know, supporters are just as able at letting their clubs know when they're unhappy with their manager over social media these days as they are when they are in the stadium. I think, you know, even more so now perhaps that not necessarily with the pay-per-view, but everyone's kind of watching every game at the moment because there isn't as much to do. So, you know, whether it's, I'm not convinced by the argument that it's because of games being played behind closed doors. I do think that a lot of managers in the league are performing as we will have expected them to this year. There definitely are different mediums through which fans are able to express their anger when their team's not performing well these days.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I do agree to an extent. If you do look at the table, you think that if Palace and Newcastle are in the position of Burnley and Sheffield United, it might be slightly different in the speculation about their respective managers, because I don't think Burnley could get a manager better than Sean Dyche. He just seemed perfect for the club, and he's always, you know, got them to perform above their means on such a consistent basis. So it would be harsh to sack him after one poor run, and Chris Wilder is taking him up from League One. So again, interestingly for me, I think those two teams have probably suffered for not having fans in the stadium most. I think you think of the type of football they play, the type of players they have, I think they benefit from the atmosphere and the crowd being in the stadium. I'd maybe include Palace and Newcastle in that as well to an extent, but I think with Newcastle sometimes the crowd can have a negative impact that maybe by not being there is a positive. But yeah, for those two clubs, I think if there were other clubs in that position, we might see a little bit more managerial speculation. But I agree, I don't think there's a manager in the Premier League at the moment that I think it's so obvious he has to go, whereas we have had that in previous years. The only one is Solskjaer, but you know, the club seems to back him so much, and I think even the supporters back him as well. I don't think there would be that outcry for him to lose his job yet, especially after the recent results in the Champions League and the win over Everton. There does seem to be an ability to pick up a result when he needs it most. So it'd be an interesting one to follow as we progress through the season. I think that we'd definitely see fewer managerial sackings, but it's an interesting one to follow. Yeah, we'll move into talking about Palace and Newcastle now, I guess, as we're the only ones here. So from the start of Palace, it was a good win at the weekend, beating Leeds. What are your thoughts on the match? And were you surprised to see Palace score four goals? I think that was the main thing that I took away from it, thinking, God, if Leeds have let four to Palace, I think they're going to be conceding a lot of goals this year.
Yeah, definitely surprised on that front. I think it was first time we've scored three goals in the first half of a game since we played Bournemouth on the last day of the 2018-19 season, I think it was. So it's been a while since that happened. And I think prior to yesterday, we'd only scored more than one once at home in 2020. Obviously, there haven't been as many games in 2020 as there would be in a usual year because of COVID. But still kind of an interesting stat and sort of speaks to what you were saying, a little bit concerning if you're a Leeds fan. But I do think that that's kind of the sort of game that Leeds tend to create. they've been great to watch this season, but they just, you know, they draw it out of teams, even teams like Palace, who typically sit back a little bit more. They want to go toe to toe, they commit players forwards, and they sort of turn it into a bit of a basketball match. And if I'm being honest, I think that's almost perfect for Palace. And it certainly felt sort of like that sort of basketball feel in the first half. We actually started on the front foot, which surprised me a little bit, and obviously went in front through a good Scott Dan header. Obviously, Bamford's disallowed goal was a bit of a farce, so felt a bit fortunate there. But I think, you know, as I say, Leeds do have a way of creating these end-to-end open games. So when we were 2-1, 3-1 up, you never sort of felt like they were out of it. And that's why I think our second half performance in particular impressed me so much. You know, we really did kind of revert to type at that point. We looked solid defensively, didn't allow them any clear-cut chances, and dangerous side on the counter, and, you know, created the better chance in that second half, and were able to find that fourth goal to kill it off. So, you know, in a way, it was kind of Roy Hodgson at his best. But I think yesterday's performance was sort of vindication for Palace fans in a way, those Palace fans who have been calling for us to be a little bit more expansive, because I think we do have the players to do so. You know, there's been a lot said about our possession stats this season. I think we're averaging somewhere in the mid to late 30s. And our approach in games against Chelsea, Brighton and Wolves in particular has been really, really negative. And that sort of started to grate on the fan base a little bit. So, you know, I think yesterday proved that with the players we've got, you know, your Zahas, your Townsends, Eze, Ayew, and that's without mentioning the likes of Batshuayi, Benteke, who are on the bench, we should be a little bit more ambitious in the way we play, because, you know, we are more than capable of giving teams problems and scoring goals. Not every team is perhaps going to give us as much space as Leeds did, and games aren't going to be, not every game is going to be as open as the one yesterday, but, you know, I think we can try to play a little bit more on the front foot, because we certainly do have the players in the squad to do that.
Yeah, you mentioned the recruitment, I guess, and that you knew you now have players to play a little bit more offensive. Do you think that you are starting to see that? Do you think that you're now starting to settle on a more attacking style? Or, I mean, under Hodgson is always going to be somewhat pragmatic, but, you know, with Eze, Zaha, Batshuayi as well, you've got players there that can be genuinely exciting. Do you think that we are going to see Palace score more goals now? And do you think that there has been a slight change in style, or is it just the same system with better players?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I think it's more of the latter, to be honest. I mean, it's been a bit of a weird one this season, because we've accumulated a decent points total without really setting the world alight or reaching our best. But as you say, that is life under Hodgson. I think people pointed out before Saturday's game that we were level on points with Leeds, and, you know, the way people have praised Leeds this season, you might have thought that they'd be way out in front of us. But that does kind of really speak to the difference in approach. You know, we haven't set up to be more attacking this year, I don't think. As I alluded to before, the way we set up at home to Brighton, away to Wolves was really disappointing. Away to Chelsea as well. You know, you're not going to Stamford Bridge expecting to win, but we kind of set up in a way that we've gone there for a 0-0. And I think whenever a team does that, the inevitability is that eventually someone makes a mistake and you concede a goal and you've got no plan B to go to. So that's been the frustration this season. But yeah, I don't think we should be really living in fear of teams this season. We've been quite negative, but we do have the players now to play in a different way. So hopefully what we saw yesterday will have given Hodgson a little bit more confidence that he can be a little bit more open in his approach. Because we showed in the second half as well that once we do get a lead, we still have that ability to be compact, to kind of, you know, go back to what we're good at and also hit teams on the counter. So I think new players coming in has helped. I think it's also, you know, sparked a couple of the players that have been there for a few years into action, just having that added competition. And I think a crucial thing yesterday actually was the fullbacks. Patrick Van Aanholt picked up quite a serious injury at the end of last season, and Tyrek Mitchell came in, and Mitchell's been really good. I think a lot of people have had him in their fantasy team because he's just been quite a cheap, solid choice. But as good as he has been kind of defensively, he's just not the same player going forwards. You know, Van Aanholt, while his principal job is to defend, he is such a big attacking threat. He is a goal threat as well, and he links up with Zaha superbly. So I think when you add in the fact that he's back, we've also strengthened at right back with Nathaniel Klein coming in, Nathan Ferguson as well, who's out injured at the moment, but, you know, more attack-minded fullbacks also. We're starting to see this squad take a little bit more shape, and, you know, when everyone is fit, I think it is certainly a team which has a lot more attacking potential than it has shown perhaps in recent times.
Yeah, you mentioned Zaha there. It's interesting watching him this year, and I'd be interested to get your thoughts, because I haven't watched every Palace game this year, but for me, I think there's been a change in his attitude. I think after the 2018-19 season, where he got 10 goals, 5 assists, and he was, you know, man of the match nearly every other week, and it felt like then he thought it was the time to move on and maybe go to a bigger club or test himself in European competition. It didn't quite happen for one reason or another. And then last year, there was a little bit of a decline. He had a period around Christmas time where he was really good, but he didn't look quite the same player. But this year, it's been a complete change for him. He's already matched his goals and assists from last season. One more goal, one fewer assists, but I'm sure they're both going to improve significantly over the coming months. Penalties have helped him a little bit, but I think there's just been a change in his hitter's approach a little bit. He doesn't seem as sulky as he was last season. Have you seen that as a fan? And do you think that he is now, I guess, applying himself in the right way and maybe not playing for the move? Because I think if he had played like this last season as well, he might have got a move. But I think he's getting to the point now where maybe he sees himself being at Palace for the long term, and being the talismanic figure for Palace might not be such a bad thing, especially with the players coming in, that there is a little bit more vibrant football and he won't be expected to do everything on his own. We saw Eze at the weekend do quite well, and I think he's only going to improve. Batshuayi coming in hasn't quite done much yet in this loan spell. We saw what he could do a couple of years ago, and we've seen what he can do for Belgium as well. So I'm sure he will come good in the next few months. So it does seem to be a better place to be for Palace. But I just think there has been a change in attitude from Zaha. So it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on him and where you think maybe he will be in the next couple of years.
Definitely, there's been a change in his attitude, I think. He came into last season just completely on the back of a horrendous transfer saga where, you know, he almost sort of jeopardised his relationship with the fans in a sense by handing in that transfer request on deadline day. But having said that, you know, the amount that he's done for us, I don't think Palace fans are ever going to kind of put him in the bad books. But, you know, this year it just looks completely like, it just looks like he's enjoying his football again. Last season there just did seem to be the kind of overriding frustration that he hadn't got a move, that he wasn't playing at a higher level, and that he was kind of, you know, still in a team that ultimately is beneath him. You know, Palace fans know that very well, that Zaha is too good for us. He is good enough to play at a higher level. And I think a lot of Palace fans wouldn't begrudge him the opportunity to do that. You know, I personally have said for the last couple of seasons that I'd as much miss watching him play for us every week. There is part of me that would love to see what he can go and achieve elsewhere and what he would be like in European competition. So I can only imagine what that's like for him, knowing that he is good enough for that level and not being able to prove it. But I think, yeah, this season he's just kind of accepted the situation. The thing that's just always held him back from a move is that he signed that 5-year contract with us. you know, he's not earning an insignificant amount of money, but that 5-year contract is essentially what has been his undoing in a way, because it's meant that Palace have been able to demand the fee that they have, knowing that there's still so long left to run on that contract. So, I think essentially the past transfer window just didn't have as much drama as the one before. So his head just hasn't been turned in the same way that it was. I'm not even sure that it doesn't even sound like there was as much interest shown in him as previously, like you said, coming off the back of a poor season. So I think he's realised that the best way to talk now is just to do so on the pitch. And, you know, you mentioned there that he wasn't particularly great last season. I think he's already reminded everyone this year that he certainly is one of the best players outside of the top six. And in doing that, he is going to sort of drum up that interest again. And, you know, if you ask me about the next 2 years, he's in his late 20s now. So if you're looking at it, you'd have to say that this January, next summer would probably be the one where he does need to get that move if he is going to sort of be playing at that level at his peak. I personally don't think he'll go in January. I think there's a higher chance of him going next summer. There'll be less time to run his contract. Obviously, at that point, I think it'll only be 2 years, maybe. So obviously, the club, if they want to recuperate some sort of money that they can reinvest in the squad, then that would be the time to sell. Really, really happy with him this season. It's just kind of been him back to his best. He frustrated on a few occasions last year, perhaps didn't look as in it as he always has done, but this year I don't think anyone can doubt his commitment. And, you know, perhaps seeing the ambition that the club has shown in the transfer market has also kind of helped him a little bit, and some of those fresh faces coming in, being surrounded by a little bit more quality maybe than he was previously. And I think that's been reflected in his form. So yeah, it's been great to see. It's always nicer to see Zaha playing with a smile on his face than when he's sort of bruised and whatnot. So yeah, no, really pleased with the way that he's been performing this season.
Yeah, I think there's definitely been an improvement, and Palace are only going to benefit from that, even if it is for the short term. But I think at his age now, bigger clubs may be reluctant to spend as much as Palace would want. So it might just be that he stays at Palace, which I don't think it would be a bad thing for him. There'll be some regrets maybe in the future, but playing for one club for the majority of your career and being remembered as a legend can never be a bad thing. But yeah. I think now we'll talk about the Newcastle. So if you got any questions for me about Steve Bruce's mighty man, this will be the perfect time.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, you guys were down at an informed Southampton on Friday. You know, with the form that they're in, I'm not sure many people were expecting you to go down there and cause an upset. But, you know, after such a positive performance and result against Everton, was it still a little bit disappointing to see the performance that was turned in?
Yeah, it was a little bit. I think we played quite well against Everton. I think we were helped by the amount of players that they were missing, but it was still a good performance. And that's the problem with Newcastle under Steve Bruce. I spoke about him a little bit earlier when we were talking about managers and maybe not being judged in the stadium as they were before. And I think that's especially true for Bruce. I think if you're an outsider looking in, you look at the results, you look at the position of the table, you might look see when the Carabao Cup quarter final and think that Bruce is doing a solid enough job. And I think if you're looking at, if all you looked at were tables and results, he would be. But if you look at any deeper stats and look at the performances, there's just such a trend that you have to be concerned about. We spoke about Palace and your style. You know that with Hodgson, you're not going to concede many goals. You're not going to be cut open 3-4 times a game. And that was true for us as well under Benitez. It didn't happen often. We would never lose 4 or 5-0. It just wouldn't happen. But with Bruce, I think last year, Dubravka made more saves than any other goalkeeper. This year, Caldalo's made more saves than any other goalkeeper. That's a worrying trend, you know. Even if some of the chances haven't been great, I think Southampton didn't create too many clear-cut chances. It's just, if you're conceding so many shots and inviting, if you're inviting your opposition to have all the territory and all the shots, you're not going to win many games. And I think some of the games we have won, we've been a little bit fortunate. You know, the game against Spurs was case in point. We got a point there, controversial handball decision, and we must have conceded somewhere between 25 and 30 shots. It was ridiculous. It's just not pleasant watching the team. There just seems to be that point with Bruce where it's difficult to see what his plan is. He shifts between five at the back and four at the back. He shifts players, it shifts formations. This looks like he's trying so many things and seeing what sticks. And you'd hope after a positive performance against Wolves, I thought we looked solid there and we weren't conceding too many chances. It looked a lot better. We weren't great in too much either, but you know, you start from a solid foundation, you build there. We've got counter-attacking players. You know, the pace of Almiron, St. Maximin, Callum Wilson's movement, he gets so many. He's the type of striker that will find a way to have a decent chance, even if he doesn't have much service. I've been really impressed with his movement this year, and he's added a focal point that we were lacking. So I think we'll be fine, but it's just difficult to get behind Bruce, and it's difficult to see what he's trying to do. And he keeps talking about how it's a work in progress, but you know, it can only be so long for it to be a work in progress. And they've brought in a lot of players for him. It's not like he's working with a squad of players that aren't his. He's approved of a lot of the transfers, so it's getting to the point now where I just want to see the team go out and have a plan. You know, if we played like Palace, I think that would be perfectly fine. That's probably what we should aspire to at the moment with the players we have. Wolves are another one. You know, they play five at the back with wing backs, but with Wolves you see a little bit more. You can see what their game plan is. You see them press a little bit more. You see them push up a little bit more. Whereas with Newcastle, it just seems like we are just regularly just letting the opposition do what they want. And the game happened to us at Southampton. We didn't do anything to stop what was happening. It just sort of happened to us. We were getting pressed up all the time, conceding the possession in our own half. And we should have went down to Southampton and thought, they've got Danny Ings out. This is our chance to go there and start quickly, make them a little bit, you know, nervous to be missing Danny Ings and restrict their attack from having time on the ball in the final third. But we just didn't do that, and it was quite easy for them in the end. So it's disappointing one. In a decent position in the table, I think we're on a. I think we might be on the same amount of points as Leeds, or have one more. I'm not completely sure, but I think we're in a similar position to Leeds. So you know, you mentioned that earlier, how much praise they've been getting. So if we're on the same amount of points, we're doing all right, and I think we'll stay up. I think that we've got enough players and enough quality to stay up, and we seem to win matches where we need to win. So I think we'll be fine, especially as, you know, we've already picked up three wins already, and and you're looking down at Sheffield United and Burnley, who haven't done that, and Fulham and West Brom just don't seem to be good enough for this level. So I think we'll be all right, but it's just it's just not much enthusiasm watching the team at the moment, which is difficult.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned sort of aspiring to play like Palace, which I'm not sure I've heard many people say before, but because I've always thought of Palace and Newcastle as quite similar in a sense, in terms of, especially in the last few years, in terms of the setup. You know, I think we can both look really bad at times, but just sort of seem to accumulate enough points to be safe. You know, you mentioned there sort of have a habit of winning when you need to. I think that's something that both Hodgson and Bruce, that's something that they both tend to do. And you obviously mentioned Wilson before. Perhaps he's maybe been papering over a few cracks with the goals that he's been scoring. He's obviously proving already what a great signing he was. I was quite envious of that one myself, because he is just a natural goal scorer. And he is way out there in front for you guys in that department. But, you know, is there ever a worry about where the goals are going to come from when he isn't firing? You know, you mentioned St. Maximin, Almiron, both good attacking players, but, you know, not quite finding the net as much as maybe you would like them to.
Yeah, definitely. He went off with a bit of a hamstring injury at Southampton, which wasn't great. I think it looked a bit like it was a precaution rather than a serious one, which you understand when you're 2-0 down. There wasn't much point in keeping him on the pitch at that point. But definitely, I think that he's going to be playing every game when he's fit. And if he does go down injured, I think that we saw what happened last year. Joel Linton playing as the striker, he didn't quite look up to it. He looks a little bit better when he plays off the wing. Still doesn't get many chances, but just seems to contribute a little bit more. I think Alba and St. Maximin are both very inconsistent. I think Shelby was our top scorer last season with 6 goals. So if we'd have repeated that, I think we would have went down this year. But luckily, we've got Wilson. So I do hope he does stay fit. But if he doesn't, I'm definitely worried about where the goal is going to come from. I think Dwight Gayle's coming back soon. You obviously know Gayle very well, but when he came in after lockdown, he scored a few goals. And I think that if he's a good enough backup, I think, to Wilson. I think Gayle is never going to get 15 goals in the Premier League, but he also always chip in with a few important ones. And I think if we manage to get a little bit more solid at the back, we should have enough to still win games, even without Wilson. But it's definitely a worry. But the thing about Almiron and Saint-Maximin, they're only going to get better. I think they're at that age now where they're not going to, you know, get worse in the final third. They're only going to go one way, which is a positive. And I think that hopefully Joe Ellington, now he's not being relied upon in such a big way, he'll improve as well, just off the radar. Every time he does come off the bench, or he's played this year, he has looked a lot better and he's contributing a lot more. So hopefully that will lead to goals as well. So I think hopefully we've got enough, but I would like another striker. I think it's important that we get Gayle back fit, because I think he's a solid squad player in the Premier League. And he did get a few goals for us after lockdown. And I think that although Shelby finished as our top goal scorer, I think Gayle's goals per minute was quite good. So hopefully we've got enough there. But yeah, it would be a worry if Wilson got injured. I think he's so important to us now. We've seen that so far this season. I think he's been involved in all but two of our goals, and one of the ones he wasn't involved in was an own goal. So he's very important to us, and that's obvious when you watch us play. But I think we're close to running out of time. So I just wanted to get your thoughts, Sam, on for player watch this week, on what do you think of your new signings, and which new signing has stood out most so far at the start of the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to say Eze after yesterday's performance. I think Nathaniel Kleiners looks really good since coming in, considering that he missed all of last season. Batshuayi hasn't had the rub of the green yet. He had a goal disallowed for offside in three consecutive games, and then we haven't seen Nathan Ferguson or Jack Butland yet. So Eze is kind of the one. He is the signing who caught the eye in the summer as well, and sort of most excited fan base. And while we've seen glimpses of what he can do so far, he's had to be quite patient, because Jeffrey Schlupp has been fairly good. He's a reliable player, and Hodgson has favoured him on a few occasions. But I think yesterday was the first time a game really suited Eze, and you know, he showed his quality and proved that he absolutely is good enough to make a difference at this level. You know, his free kick was brilliant. That's the thing that's going to be shared loads on Twitter and YouTube and whatever. But aside from that, the way he just glides with the ball and is able to get away from defenders so easily, it's just really, really nice to watch. I think most importantly, he can be that link between the midfield and the forwards that we kind of missed in the last few years. Our system doesn't necessarily lend itself to a player like him. Hodgson doesn't really use players in the way that he sort of just gives one individual a license to roam. You know, he likes every single player to be part of the defence, if you know what I mean, that sort of rigid structure that he has. But on yesterday's evidence, Eze is learning more and more about what Hodgson wants from him. And while he probably will have to defend a little bit more than maybe he might have done in his days at QPR, he is still going to get those opportunities to influence the game going forward, especially when we are in those sort of back and forth matches like yesterday, where we do have a lot of opportunities to counter. And I think he just brings a little bit more quality in that final third. You know, we talk about Zaha, talk about Ayew and Townsend. You know, sometimes going forward, those three, as good as they are, just they can be very sort of head down, charged towards the goal, where Eze, I feel, gets his head up a lot more. Mate is quite thoughtful with his decisions, and it was fairly obvious yesterday, and the way he was linking up with Zaha was really exciting to see. So I think if those two can continue to link up in the way that they did, then will be a real big attack, will be a real attacking threat in the next few weeks. So yeah, I don't think anyone thought Eze was going to immediately slot into the first team. We knew he was going to need time to make the step up to this level. Also, Hodgson doesn't tend to throw in new signings straight away, but what we've been seeing so far from him this season has certainly shown why we were willing to spend quite a lot of money on him.
Yeah, I think for Newcastle is quite self-explanatory. Callum Wilson, we spoke about him earlier, so I don't think any more has to be said there. But with that, we are now out of time for this week, Sam. So if you'd just like to tell people where they can reach you or anything you've got going on, that'll be a good time.
Cheers, Jake. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for hosting. I'm Sam Karp. I'm a Palace fan. You can find some of my stuff on the Eagles Beak and I'm also the deputy editor of Sports Pro, so you can find some of my other stuff on there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at @sam_cop.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. And obviously, you can get me on Twitter at @jakejackwith2ends. You can get the show at EPL Roundtable. And you can also get the other shows we do on this channel. We have a daily podcast with Dave that you can get on the EPL Index channel. And we have a championship show as well that you can also get. So check both of those out. But yeah, we'd just like to thank Sam again for joining me, and thank all of you guys for listening. I hope you join us again next time.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.